Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Buy now and pay later is the promise of the Swedish finance company Klarna, and that's the promise it's made to its users. However, recent reports from Klarna show that while the company keeps its end of the bargain, increasing numbers of users are not showing the same courtesy. Klarna is reporting losses of over $100 million, and this is due to users skipping payments. Klarna is just one of many companies attempting to integrate the buy now, pay later model into their sales. Yet concerns persist about the ability and willingness of users to pay off their debts. Joining us now is Cora Lewis, a business reporter for the Associated Press. Cora, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
So can you explain in more detail this payment model that Klarna, and other companies do it too, as Klarna happens to be in the news recently, but it's buy now, pay later. Explain how that works.
Definitely. So at checkout, you may have seen increasingly online the offerings from these companies, which ask you to make some sort of down payment and then spread out the remaining payments for your purchase over time, typically in 4 or less payments. And so these really are a form of short-term credit that are marketed as zero interest. And it's only if you are late with payments or you miss payments that you typically are hit with fees or interest.
That's what I was just going to ask. So if there's zero interest, how does the company make money?
Well, on the back end, actually, by charging a small fee to retailers, because buy now, pay later companies have discovered that people spend more when they have the option to buy now and pay later. So one of the ways that these companies do make money is through their contracts with the retailers who use them.
Okay, so the retailer, say it's just like an online clothing brand B, and they want you to buy more clothes. So if they have the option at the end at checkout that you can, you know, fill up your cart with as much as you want, you can just pay a small down payment now and pay off the rest later. But then that clothing company B has already paid Klarna for that ability. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And people do typically have bigger cart sizes when they have this option. And so that really works out for the retailer, they've found.
And are these loans or they're short-term loans, are they regulated in any way? Is anyone kind of watching over them?
So for a while, they were pretty unregulated. Mm-hmm. And under the Biden administration, the Consumer Finance Protection, Financial Protection Bureau did come up with a rule saying that these companies should be subject to the Truth in Lending Act, just like credit card companies. And so the same regulations, disclosures, dispute processes, and all the rest should apply. But the Trump administration has now said they won't be enforcing that rule.
Okay. And so if they're not enforcing that rule, what's the risk to consumers? What does, I guess, you know, having regulations on credit card companies, how does that keep a consumer safe as opposed to not to this company not having to deal with that?
Definitely. So one way that consumers are kept safe with credit cards is by having the credit bureaus keep track of all of the loans, which isn't really happening yet with buy now, pay later. And so a study by the Federal Reserve has found that this can lead to consumers loan stacking or taking out many loans from many different buy now, pay later companies. And it becomes very hard to keep track of the fees and the payments, some of which are automatically deducted from bank accounts, which can lead to overdraft fees and to increased credit card payments, according to this Federal Reserve study.
Hmm. Now, a part of the reason we're doing this hour today is because Klarna had a report come out that they are losing money because people are not paying their loans. Did Klarna provide any reason for why people are failing to make payments on the service?
Yeah, Klarna is growing. And so they did say that part of the reason that in real numbers, more people are missing payments is just because they're extending more loans year over year. So as they extend more loans, more people will also not be making those payments. That said, other consumer watchdogs and people watching the industry in the space have found reports that more people are missing payments in part because of feeling overextended because of inflation, because wages maybe not keeping up with their expenses. And so people turning to these forms of short-term credit that are easier to obtain if you've maxed out your credit card. It doesn't take a credit check to qualify for a buy now, pay later loan.
And who are the people using these services for the most part? Do we know the profile of the typical Klarna user?
Yeah, the CFPB and again, the Federal Reserve have done some studies, and the typical user tends to be younger, which maybe isn't surprising since a lot of this originated with online shopping. People across all income brackets have been increasingly adopting the loans. Used responsibly, they are zero interest loans. And people of color and women are also more likely to use the loans, especially when it comes to making ends meet month to month.
And I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people out there using it responsibly. Maybe they need to buy a big ticket item like a couch or a dining room table, and they don't have $2,000 right at that second, but they can do four payments of $500. That's why these were set up, right? These type of things. So you don't have to put that big $2,000 on your credit card.
Yeah, I think that was definitely part of it, almost like an old layaway model. Though the early buy now, pay later companies also marketed a lot of luxury items like designer clothes or shoes, makeup, and things like that. Some impulse buying during the pandemic, especially.
Now, and I've seen reports that people are using it to buy concert tickets because concert tickets now are so expensive. Have you heard that too?
Yes, Coachella did have a headline about the high percentage of people who financed their music festival tickets earlier this year.
But then also we were seeing reports that that Klarna partnered with DoorDash, and that kind of became a little bit of a joke where it was like, you're going to DoorDash your $22 meal from Chipotle, right? And you're going to finance that?
Yes, that also sparked some online backlash. I think people calling it a recession indicator if you were taking out a loan to pay for your lunch. The company has said that that delivery partnership had more to do with larger delivery choices, maybe things you're buying for your household. But certainly the headline drew a lot of attention.
But I have to imagine that on the back end for Klarna to deal with the, for lack of a better word, I'm going to say paperwork, but I know it's all online, to deal with the paperwork of a loan with four installments that it maybe cost under $50. I think that seems not worth it. But is this what they're doing? They have lots of these, right?
Yeah, I think they've said that for delivery under $35, they're hoping that, or they expect that consumers will use a different form of payment. They're moving closer to offering more banking services, almost like a debit card. That said, at scale, certainly enough consumers making small purchases and spreading out those payments over time has been a model that so many companies are adopting and getting into, seemingly for good reason or particular financial reasons. But I think you're right that certainly on the consumer side, keeping track of so many small loans does seem to pose problems.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the Buy Now, Pay Later services with business reporter for the Associated Press, Cora Lewis. And you mentioned earlier, it does remind me of layaway. I don't know if, you know, younger listeners might not remember, but like Kmart and Sears, they were famous for layaway, where you could put an item on hold and pay for it later. But in this instance, you get your items, but then you have this loan. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right.
So now Klarna reported $100 million in losses for people not paying their loans. What does that mean for their service? I mean, they must have a lot out there if they can stomach that much loss this early in a young company.
Absolutely. Yeah. Klarna did delay their IPO in part because of the tariffs. And I think economic uncertainty is certainly something that all companies have to be taking into account now. That said, they did say the percentage of the company's loans at a global level that went unpaid in the first quarter grew from just 0.51% in 2024 to 0.54% this year. And so that's a relatively small increase. And the company said in their data, they don't see signs of a weakened U.S. consumer.
Now, do you know, or is Klarna saying, like, what's the penalty if you miss a payment? Do they have stacking penalties? Is it one fee? What do you know the penalty?
Yeah, if you don't pay, typically all of these companies will work with you and give you some sort of extension to make those payments and kind of settle up with the company. But ultimately, if you do miss enough payments and they remain unpaid, you are shut out from using these services. So that is one catch that allows the company to stay up to date with the state of the consumer, that you can't continue to use Klarna and take out these short-term loans if you're unable to pay them back.
And if people don't pay them back, will they end up getting in trouble? Will they end up with, like, the big, like, garnishing of wages and that kind of thing?
I wouldn't go so far as to worry about garnishing of wages, but I would say that increasingly missed payments are being reported to the credit bureaus. Significantly not made payments. So your use of buy now, pay later doesn't typically help you build credit as yet, though that's changing. But if you do miss payments, it can now impact your credit score.
Now, there's other companies. We're talking about Klarna, but there's another one called Affirm. There's a company called Afterpay. I think, doesn't PayPal offer the service too?
Yes, PayPal, Sezzle. There are a lot of companies in the space, which I think can be confusing both for consumers and for the companies trying to sort of make sure people understand what the nature of these loans are when there are so many different models in terms of fee and interest rates.
And do you think this is a new trend? Are we going to see more and more buy now, pay later, if even companies like DoorDash are bringing it in?
I think so. I think more and more retailers are partnering with these companies because they see that there's really appetite and demand from the consumer to have this alternative to credit cards, to have this other form of payment that is faster and it exists on your phone. It's really a fintech version of this layaway model.
And I guess it's easier than a credit card because credit cards you have to apply for, you don't get one right away. But also, credit cards have interest rates upwards of 20% now, right? And so this is probably much more attractive for the short term and a quick fix.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly right. And that's certainly what the companies themselves say, that with interest rates on credit cards so high and so many people already paying off credit card debt, that this is an alternative.
Do you feel like there will end up being more regulation? I know the Biden administration tried to and Trump has pulled back on it. But do you foresee down the line that, could you see this getting out of hand?
I do think there will be more regulation. The UK just imposed some regulation on these companies. And so I think because they are, many of them, global, and because the credit bureaus are also taking steps independent of regulation to keep better track of these loans, I think there will be more and more oversight.
Yeah. And we're spending the rest of the hour just talking about increasing debt in America and how, Americans of all ages are having problems getting out of debt and what to do about it. Do you see, I could see both sides with these kind of buy now, pay later, where they help people, especially because of the zero interest, but also it can be a cycle that you get stuck in and it's really hard to get out of. Can you see both sides of it?
Absolutely. I think that's really true. There are stories, of people using these alternative types of credit just to get through month to month buying groceries or having some sort of emergency expense that they then pay off. And, they're not trapped in a high interest loan with their credit card or a payday lender, for example. Mm-hmm. But then again, these are very new and there are so many options that it does seem that there are risks.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. That was Associated Press business reporter Cora Lewis. Cora, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, we're going to continue talking about consumer debt. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
Probably not, but it depends a lot on age and so forth. The the pattern we found, because we've done some research using national surveys, is that as people get older, they're less likely to be delinquent, like miss payments by 2 months or more. But certainly for younger people, it can get pretty concerning. You know, people under 35, in our analysis, almost 8% of them had been delinquent sometime in the past year on their debt payments.
What is the largest source of consumer debt in the United States? Is it credit cards?
Oh, sorry, I didn't check on that. Credit cards are important, and certainly education debt is. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I read just the other day that a lot of student or people with student loans are going to start being delinquent because of the, no more lifting by the president of the or canceling the debts and so forth. So, the education debts are important. The credit card debt, I think, is the most likely for people to be delinquent, partly because of the consequences of being late on a credit card are less, less important or less drastic. Because, if you're late on your mortgage, conceivably you could lose your house. And if you're late on your car payments, you could lose your car. But on the other hand, with credit card debt, it'll keep piling up, but it's hard for the credit card companies to collect the debt unless they take the trouble of attaching your wages. But of course, the other thing that everybody for all types of debt face if they're sort of habitually delinquent is their credit score will go down, and then it'll be harder in the future to get debt. So in a sense, it's like, okay, first of all, I think there are two types of people who get delinquent on their debt. One is just for carelessness or whatever, they don't keep track. Mm-hmm. But for the people who do keep track, in a sense, it's like a decision, or at least I think of it, economists would think of it as a rational decision. You decide, do I spend the money now to make the payment on this debt, or do I enjoy myself, go out to dinner more, or whatever, whatever it is. So, I suspect that some people are not aware or are not really concerned about the possible future consequences of getting a bad credit score, because some landlords, for instance, will check your credit score if you're trying to get to rent with them, and you might not be able to rent with them if you have a bad, really bad credit score. And some employers check your credit score. And so in addition to not having trouble buying a home or getting a car in the future, those are other possible consequences. But it's, it may be hard. Now, obviously, if your income drops, you may not have a choice, if you lose your job or whatever. And there are ways to try to deal with that with organizations that'll help try to sort of help you with your debt payments, or help, discuss with the creditors the ways to, if they can accept a lower amount and so forth. But, I don't know. I don't know if everybody really thinks through all the possible consequences. So that's partly a matter of sort of financial education.
Yeah. We spent the first part of the show talking about the growing rise of buy now, pay later loans. And they do have 0% interest, but there is a big growth in all of these buy now, pay later loans. What do you think of this trend?
Well, it's been around varying amounts for a long time. I remember about 15 years ago, I was on a PhD dissertation defense committee with a student who had already started working for a big credit card company. And I was asking him, you know, why do the credit card companies make these offers? You know, because I had sometimes used it when my daughter was in college. I would take advantage of a 0% interest rate to, and I would always pay it off before the rate ended. But he said, well, enough people don't, and then they start paying the 18 or 24% interest that the companies still make money on that. So it's obviously very tempting. And the question is, do you have the planning ability or willpower or whatever to avoid having, you know, whatever, you know, some people get $10,000 or $20,000 worth of that. And then if you're paying 24% interest on that, you're really going to be in trouble, I think.
Yeah, the companies like Klarna and Affirm who do these buy now and pay later loans, they are working with other companies, you know, clothing companies. People are using these buy now, pay later loans for concert tickets, but they're even working with companies like DoorDash. So you can, for your groceries or for having a meal delivered, you can take out a short-term loan with four payments and do a buy now, pay later loan. Do you think that we're going to have growing consumer debt for that under 35 bracket? Because that's what you mentioned, that the under 35 have the most debt. And that would be who is more likely, I would assume, to take out a loan on their phone, wouldn't you think?
Yes, I mean, that makes sense. And certainly to the extent that the companies make it easier to do that, you know, because, you know, certainly, say 15 years ago, there were some credit card companies offering 0%, but you had to apply and so forth. And you had to have a decent credit score to get that in the first place. But now, if you don't even have to do anything, you know, or almost nothing to start getting debt on your next meal or clothing or whatever, concert tickets, that'll probably make things worse for some people.
And do you think that the type of debt people have taken on has changed in recent years? In your studies, did it used to be mostly mortgages and cars, but is there more and more different types of debt, credit card debt, buy now, pay later ones, more student loans, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that there's certainly been an increase in student loans. And that's partly, I think, related to the government taking over a lot of the student loan business. And I think that you still, the one thing about student loans through the government is that currently you can't discharge them with bankruptcy, whereas you can, I mean, with credit card debt, you could perhaps discharge your debt or have a greatly reduced payment if you file for bankruptcy, you know, even though that has its cost and money and time, but still, you know, that was an out for most types of debt other than student loans sponsored by a government agency. So I think we'll see more of that. I mean, I've read a lot of cases where people took out student loans, you know, especially as graduate students, there wasn't much of a limit, and then they bought fancy cars and things like that. So it's, you know, even though there's some real need for that, I think it's been too tempting to try to take on student loans. And then for a couple of years when President Biden was trying to get that, some of that canceled, it's probably even more tempting. And so I don't know if the future will probably mean a lot of hardship for people who've taken out a lot of student loans.
What will happen to the overall economy or overall just consumer worries if more delinquencies and defaults, if that continues to become more common, if people are constantly defaulting on these buy now, pay later loans that have 0% interest, what do you think of that trend of more delinquencies and more defaults? What does that do to the overall thought of being a consumer?
I think it's still relatively small portion of the overall economy. So I don't think that alone would cause great problems to, you know, people other than the consumers who had those loans. It's still, you know, certainly one of the problems people in that situation are going to have is, I mean, it's already currently very hard for younger people to buy a home. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, if they have a bad credit rating from the delinquencies, then that's going to be making it much harder, you know, in addition to the high prices and the high mortgage rates. So they won't even get a loan. So that's certainly problematic, but I just don't see it causing a big impact on the overall economy.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about consumer debt and the growing amount of debt in America with Sherman Hanna, a professor of consumer sciences at Ohio State University. Now, earlier you mentioned the idea of credit score and how some landlords, you won't be able to rent an apartment if you don't have a high enough credit score, and they do check those things. But in order to have a credit score, you have to have taken out a loan here or there, or have some debt. Is that true? Is there good debt that helps your credit score and versus bad debt?
Yes, and certainly it's possible to, you know, there's some advice in like personal finance textbooks and so forth to get a little bit of borrowing activity so that you can establish a credit score, as long as you're good about repaying on time and so forth. And, you know, then it's sort of interesting because I was just looking at my credit score and I mean, it's very high, but on the other hand, it's still, you know, we always without exception pay for many years anyway, have paid our off the credit balances in full. It still shows, you know, so sometimes if we've had a major purchase, you know, it'll say, okay, you have $30,000 of credit card debt and so forth. But, you know, for me and, you know, if other people like me, I guess it's sort of like moving money around, taking money out of a savings account and so forth. But for a lot of people, then they high debt, and then you start getting dings on your credit with the late payments and so forth. It's that'll be a real negative.
How does it work to have a credit score? If someone is 22 years old and has never had a credit card and doesn't have a mortgage, doesn't have a car payment, but they want to get an apartment, do they even have a credit score?
Perhaps not. There are some ways to do it without taking out any credit, but you know, it's probably not a bad idea to try to have a little bit of credit as long as you carefully manage it.
Mm. So,
you know, I mean, it's even a matter of having like a, you know, if you have a credit card that you always pay off in full, then, you know, that won't hurt your credit score. You'll get a credit score, and then, you know, you'll have if you have like a couple of years of perfect payments and so forth, then, you know, your credit score will probably be pretty good.
Yeah. It's just always been interesting to me, the idea of a credit score, because someone who has a mortgage and two car payments and several credit cards can have a higher credit score than someone, you know, right out of college, just because they they have all this, but they have a lot of debt. So it always, I think credit scores are an interesting way of rating people. Is that just how we've always done it? One of those things?
Well, for many decades, we've mm-hmm. done it that way. You know, in the 50s and 60s, you know, based on my own family and relatives, it's like, okay, if you owed money to a doctor or a dentist or something, And actually, my father was in the military, so we would owe money to a dentist and then move out of town, and there wouldn't be a national credit score or something. But nowadays, then that would be
That'll follow you now.
that'll follow us. And so the next town we moved to, the dentist might not take our business, but it will. So anyway, it's certainly been a big issue, and more in the last 30, 40 years. Of course, I mean, there were very, very few credit cards in the late 1960s, and then it started, exploding like more and more. So certainly it's ubiquitous now that you'll have almost everybody has a credit card, and almost everybody has a credit score and so forth. I don't know. I haven't seen an exact percentage of like how many landlords actually use credit scores or how many employers. And there have been some proposals in some, I think in Congress and in some state legislatures to try to forbid employers from using credit scores because there is a racial disparity in credit scores. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's still certainly a possibility that people need to think about.
And before we end here, we spent a lot of time talking about people, younger people and people under 35, but I noticed one of your areas of research, you have researched retirement adequacy. How is the average American looking when it comes to having enough money for retirement versus how much debt they have?
Well, it does have an impact, and certainly an increasing proportion of people when they hit their 60s still have some mortgage debt because of refinancing. And I know I used to have a undergraduate class where for students who wanted to become financial planners, and they all had to find clients, and some of them there would be cases where somebody would have, who was like 60 years old, had taken on student loans for her own education or for her children's or whatever. And so she had like $50,000 of student loans at age 60. And certainly that's going to make her retirement a lot dicier, I guess, so ideally, I would suggest people try to get all their debt down to zero as they approach retirement. But
And also, you've studied household saving patterns. Are people s saving less now than in the past?
not really. There's been if you look at sort of the national aggregate statistics, it's sort of bumped around for many years, and then the Federal Reserve Board has the Survey of Consumer Finances. And they ask people, do you spend about as much as income, less than income, or more than income? And that also has sort of bumped around up and down over the past 30 years. And I don't think it's, I mean, I think overall it's partly related to the aging of the population. And so as people get older, on the average, they're more likely to be saving out of their current income.
That was Ohio State Professor of Consumer Sciences, Sherman Hanna. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk about how to navigate consumer debt and maybe how to get out of it. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Consumer debt continues to grow nationwide. As a result, people continue to default and miss payments as well. Knowing how to manage and navigate debt is becoming an increasingly important skill. Many steps can be taken to ensure one's finances and debt never become unmanageable. Joining me now is the founder of the Consumer Relief Network, Michael Bovee. Michael, welcome to All Sides.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Amy.
So from what you are seeing, as someone who helps people with navigate debt, what is the primary source of consumer debt in the United States?
Well, right now we saw a whole bunch of inflation and costs increasing, right? So just daily living has become super expensive over the last several years. Some of the things that caused the setbacks, these not necessarily one-off things, but medical expenses are at all-time highs, right? That can set somebody's budget back. A lot of unexpected things are the shocks that we can't prepare for sometimes. But just the cost of living and room and board, for example, just living and keeping a roof over your head are some of the largest costs that we incur.
Earlier in the hour, we were talking about companies like Klarna and Affirm who are doing more buy now, pay later programs. And those have been increasing in recent years. Lots of different companies offer at the checkout a really easy way to get a loan over your phone with zero interest. Are you concerned about this buy now, pay later trend, or do you see it as helpful to people to make ends meet?
No, I don't. And I am concerned. It's really, when you work with people that are struggling with their finances over any period of time, and certainly a long period of time, you start to recognize the warning signs of unaffordable lifestyles or choices or just, not enough money to get through the month. You run out of money before you run out of month. And these kinds of payment options, it's the same as for years when I talk about if you're paying for necessities like your groceries, for example, and you're putting that on a credit card and you're not paying that credit card or that purchase off in full at the end of the month, then you're living beyond your means. And so you either have to cut expenses or increase your income. And that's the two option conventional wisdom before you start thinking about debt triage. But yeah, these Klarnas and the Affirms, it's the same idea. You can't afford the basic cost of living and you have to make other adjustments.
Now, we were talking with our previous guest about how some debt is required to establish credit and improve one's credit score. How do you differentiate from good debt and bad debt and how to have a good credit score without financially harming yourself?
Well, one of the better forms of debt is being able to put a roof over your head, right? A mortgage. Cars and automobiles, dependable transportation, are so flipping expensive at this point that it's hard to avoid not having auto debt, right? Mm-hmm. So I can argue that these aren't really good forms of debt either, but it is what it is in a pulled forward demand, credit-fueled economy. And with home prices and auto prices the way they are, let's just say, middle-class America, that's just how we are set up. We have to conform to that. Anything beyond that truly isn't really healthy debt unless it's student loan debt that you're taking on to further your career and your earning potential. So just like a business thinks about and you try, whenever possible, try and think of, Amy Inc., right? You're the CEO and president of your own household, right? And so anybody out there listening, think of your home as a corporation and what would be good debt to take on from a company perspective. Things that you can make money from, that debt, like advertising. Sometimes that's what you need to get your name and company and skills out there. Or capital improvements or equipment to do more jobs and expand. And so these are good reasons. So that's what student loan would represent, or a home that you can get, some kind of tax benefit from the interest and, you actually build equity. Things outside of that, not so good debt.
Mm-hmm. Now, it was recently announced that FICO would be adjusting the credit score system to a new model. How will this new model impact future consumer debt? I mean, is checking someone's credit score really the most fair way to assess a person?
Yes and no. I mean, we need something, again, going back to the credit-fueled kind of pulled forward demand economy, and creditors' willingness to take risk, right? So from a scoring, some kind of simple system, I think it actually, again, you do something long enough, you're exposed to all kinds of what I would consider unfairness in the scoring market and the credit decisions that are made by lenders and really algorithms at this point. There aren't humans making these decisions. And yes, it's simple, but it's not even all that complicated, but there are biases that I see, right? And sometimes you see that taken out in efforts to, is medical debt a true measure of somebody's ability to repay? Again, one-off shocks to somebody's life, and not, you take FICO and not taking so much score consideration into a medical debt, not taking into consideration paid collection debt, right? Some of these things that FICO is announcing that they're going to weigh less, resolved collection accounts won't weigh the same as they did before. These are good things, right? But it's also the case, not part of your question, that we as a society, I think, measure ourselves too much by our credit score. Credit scores provide a utility function. They allow us to get something at better pricing or get something at all, right? Mm-hmm. Putting our personality and our character and, who we are as a person and tying that to whether or not we have a 740 or higher, it just, that borders on ridiculous to me.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about debt, how to avoid it, how to get out from under it with the founder of Consumer Relief Network, Michael Bovey. What are some of the first steps that you talk with people to help handle the debt if they're struggling? What's always your first step whenever you talk to someone?
So for me, it's, look, if this debt didn't exist that we're on the phone talking about, would you be managing your life, right? Would everything be okay sans this debt that you're struggling with? And if the answer is no, we have to have a more fundamental conversation about income and expenses and how they're living and making adjustments. If the answer is yes, this would be fine, but for this debt or these debts, then I have to walk through kind of a waterfall decision tree about triage options. And in the US, if you have unmanageable debt, again, you're running out of money before you run out of month, you're usually going to look at three triage options. And in their order of severity or impact to you, it would typically be considered talking first to a nonprofit credit counseling organization. There are dozens national firms around the country. They'll do an exercise with you to see if they can get your payments reduced to your unsecured creditors and make that more affordable. Step one. If that doesn't work, step two, talk to a bankruptcy attorney about your ability to qualify for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. If you cannot qualify for Chapter 7 bankruptcy and would be forced into a Chapter 13, as an alternative to Chapter 13, I would then have you look into what settling with your creditors for less than what you owe would look like as an alternative only to Chapter 13.
Are you seeing more and more people need to go that route? They can't fix it with credit counseling. Has there been more bankruptcy filings in recent years?
We saw a dip in bankruptcy filings, and that's starting to come back up, right? Again, inflation, job markets, maybe more regional than national. But for an entire career, yeah, you bet, for the last 25 years, I talk almost exclusively with people who are really left with these two solutions, bankruptcy and debt settlement, because they can't manage the payments on their own. And because some of their debt is made up of creditors that don't participate in those debt management plans through the nonprofits. And I'm talking about marketplace lenders like a Best Egg or a Lending Club or, something like that. They're not a traditional brick and mortar bank with credit cards. And when those people won't provide a concession like your credit card bank will through the nonprofits, you're often stuck, right? Especially payday loans and things like that. Then you really are, if you're struggling with those, you've limited your alternatives.
Are there any federal or state programs to help people manage their debt? I mean, is it at all the responsibility of the government to help people get out from under debt?
Man, the government's got their own debt problem. they're not managing it very well. So there are guidelines, there are guardrails, if you will. All of those triage options that I just mentioned are definitely guided by federal rules. And then each state is going to provide guidance to service providers that do all of those things as well. They're not stepping in and saying, here's how to, from a paternal or maternalistic kind of, here's what you need to do with your finances. So there's nothing like that. There are, you know, obviously certain programs for certain debts. Like if you have federal backed student loan debt and need an income-based repayment plan, there are options that are there for you, right? But on private student loans, no. And so the federal or the state government isn't stepping in to cause these concessions outside of what is a federal court process known as bankruptcy, where the court gets to tell creditors to sit down. The adults are talking. We'll call you up here if we need you, and kind of set the tone of what's going to be paid, if anything, and over what duration. Outside of that, there's not a lot of state or federal government intervention into unsecured debts.
And what have you seen with people who find themselves in debt? Is it, for the most part, people living outside of their means, or is it just the world we live in today, it is becoming more impossible?
Both. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Typically, though, for most of the time I've been doing this, I spend anywhere from maybe 8 to 16 phone consultations a day on a normal business day. And so I get a lot of exposure, and across that broad spectrum of consultations, and they're free. Anybody can reach out to me and schedule that time. It's typically shocks. The main ones are income shocks. And so divorce and separation, a two-income household getting by just fine, no problems, actually making headway on debts and whatnot. But when there's one of those incomes leaves, trying to maintain the same household and the same costs and expenses becomes impossible. There's layoffs, there's, you know, people that have just even have some overtime cut, right? So they were getting by and planned everything based on, you know, regular overtime. And all it takes is just losing a shift sometimes to disrupt that. But then unknown and you can't predict sometimes the medical needs that you or your family might have. Taking in an elder parent, it can cause expenses and additional financial shock. So it's usually one-off things. And second to that would be just what you said, that life is expensive.
Yeah.
And it can get really, really hard to manage.
Debt can cause a lot of anxiety. How do you help people see a light at the end of the tunnel when you talk to them?
Bringing hope. You know, it's unfortunately, most people don't talk to their circle of influence about unmanageable debt. I mean, that would change the direction of how debt is dealt with in this country overnight if people felt secure and comfortable talking to friends, family, clergy, you know, anybody else than keeping it locked in and not finding out and learning from other people's experiences, mm-hmm. mistakes. That's what happens when we don't talk with each other. We don't get that wisdom shared with us, right? And so you end up online looking for people and help. And some of that is just a ripoff. And, you know, what you need is just good, sound information about all of your options, and then take a relaxed view of what's going to work for you. And I can usually distill that down for people, sometimes in minutes, depending on their situation and what they're trying to solve. Sometimes it takes longer, but really delivering, just like, again, why I do the waterfall decision trees. You take these three triage options, and we're going to do math on all three, which one will work for you and which one is mathematically impossible. And just that, distilling it down to maybe all three would work, maybe only two and maybe one, and then send them on their way to go find out more about that or talk to a local bankruptcy attorney or call that nonprofit. That's the light, is when you know there's at least a solution. You might not like the solution, but the light is on at the end of the tunnel, and all you have to do is walk towards it. That's huge.
Now, we only have about a minute left, but I did want to ask, because you just made me think of something. It used to be, for decades, people never talked about their wage. They wouldn't talk about what they made. But now people are more open at talking about that, and, you know, things are exposed. Do you think the same thing can help if we start talking about debt more freely, if it was part of a conversation?
Yeah, literally overnight, because we bottle things up. We have that anxiety. We make decisions based on stresses and pressures that we need to be more relaxed about. Typically, we'll make more sound decisions, right? So if we start talking to people, and you won't even talk to your sister, but your sister's friends from college shared their bankruptcy story and how relieving it was and how they were able to move on with their life, or shared how simple it was to enroll with a nonprofit credit counseling agency and get help. And just talking and opening up, that opening up, like I said, it will change the complexion of the way we talk about and deal with debt in this country literally overnight.
Thank you so much for your time. That was Michael Bovee, founder of the Consumer Relief Network. Thank you for joining us, Michael.
Yep, you bet.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.